This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the JMS Boxing Podcast with me, John.
I'm Sam.
And today we have got someone been trying to get on for a while, Zeki Hussain. How's it going?
Not bad.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Obviously, early in the morning, I've got everyone out of bed. Sam, don't look happy. Nice early start for us today. Talk about your boxing career. You got a massive passion for boxing as well.
Yeah.
And just sort of going about your life in and around it. I'll strip it all back. How did you start in boxing?
I think I've very much got a typical boxing background in the sense of same old story as everyone else. Went into boxing at a young age to stop being bullied, I suppose, or before I got bullied. My dad, I was really skinny and small. So foreign background, I think my dad knew that I was going to have a bit of trouble at school. So yeah, he just sort of pushed me into boxing and he found St Mary's. I think he was talking to someone in a local pub, funny enough, and he come home and he said to me about boxing. So I always used to sit up at night and watch it with my dad. And he said about going down to St Mary's, yeah. So that's basically it, yeah.
St Mary's Chatham.
Yeah.
Who was the trainers there?
At the time, it was Fred Dudlow, absolute legend. Charlie Rumble. Who else was there? A fella called Rob. He actually cornered me for the first, I don't know, 8 or 9 fights, I think. Can't remember his second name. But yeah.
How old was you when you first went?
I think I was 8 when I first went, but you couldn't box until you was 10. So I had 2 years of just
in the
training,
gym.
Yeah. Obviously not, you know, you start off at the, you know, the lower classes. So yeah, a little bit of a time on the weekends and stuff. And yeah, and then by the time I was 11, literally as soon as I was old enough to box, I was out on a show, yeah.
So the would you say that like you hit the passion for it relatively early on, or did it come quite hard?
No, actually, I hated it at first. I really did hate it. I remember, funny, I was actually telling someone this the other day because they're like, they look on the outside and they're like, "You, it's like you love getting punched in the face." And I'm like, I absolutely hate it. Like, people think
it's
that
weird,
you,
it
hurts. I mean, if you think that, yeah, it's just crazy. But I remember being really young and like, this is another thing I speak about quite a lot. When I was on the England boxing course not long ago, they asked me about like my sort of desires to be a coach and stuff. And it was like, I can't speak highly enough of Charlie Rumble Senior, because I remember times like sparring and I'd come out and I'd be like, I'd go in the changing room and, you know, I wouldn't want anyone to see, but I'd be in the changing room like crying. Do you know what I mean? I'd been hurt by someone. And then I'd come back out and Charlie would look at me and he'd have such a look on his face and he'd give me a big cuddle and he'd give me a kiss and he'd be like, "You're going to be a champ." And then all of a sudden, all these, like, the pain went away. Like, all of a sudden, the punch didn't hurt anymore. And it was like, I couldn't wait to get back there. And I think it's bit of a cliche, isn't it? You know, you can have an Olympic boxer walk in your gym every day, but it's how you nurture and bring them on. And I really do think that's true.
I think it's difficult, especially in boxing, because you'll go back into the changing rooms, then you get left on your own. Then you're in your own sort of head sometimes, yeah. And you're like, oh, you may think that sparring, for the instance, you may think, oh, it's not gone well, but other people have actually viewed it as gone quite well.
Yeah.
But because you've been hit and you're like, oh, I feel like I've been hit too many times, then
and obviously it is a child's mind as well, isn't it?
You know, it's true. Talking about
when I'm like 10, 11, 12s, like you don't really...
No one likes getting hit at that age.
No, but you know, I think it really did encourage me. And then over the time, I think you then, as you get better and I think you get a bit of a accustomed to getting punched a little bit more and it does become easier.
So you started, your first fight was at 11?
Yeah.
Where was that?
That was at St George's Hotel in Rochester, East Chatham.
Yeah.
Is it New Road?
Yeah, down there.
Yeah.
Was it a
basement room, like
a local gym show?
No, it would have been a local gym show. I think it would have been a St Mary's home show, but yeah, it was just along New Road, a hotel.
Yeah,
just go around the back,
get carded up, then and then.
Yeah,
start off.
Smoking was still allowed then, so you walk out of the changing rooms.
How old are you?
I'm 37 now.
37? Fucking hell. Look 37. I'll
say
that. Oh, no. I was going to say, my pipe round's been fucking hard. Do you know what I mean? Before you had your first fight, did you want to jump in? Was it?
Oh, I couldn't wait by this point.
Mm, to get carded up and then...
Yeah. And to be honest, my dad played a big factor in my boxing because, as sad as it sounds, I was never really academically that... You know, and my sisters, like, they always seem to get his attention through school and stuff. And it was like the only way I could really, well, it's wrong because this isn't true, but at the time, that's how I felt.
Yeah,
like, the only way I could really get his attention, like, my dad's got, he's real old school, my dad. Like, you know, he's the sort of fella that if me and you was arguing and we went outside to have a fight, if I was beating you, it doesn't matter that he's my dad. As long as we was fighting fair, he'd be like, go on, Sam, get on your jab, like, easy. He'd be cheering you on. Like, so my dad's a real old school sort of character. And he just loved, my old man loved it. And it was like, I could see how much it meant to him. So, yeah, I really couldn't wait to get in there and, you know, sort of.
And then, so you're saying that, like, you've done it to fight, obviously now it's slightly different, doing it to fight for his attention. Would you said your love in boxing's come through that, or did you hate it then? But because you were trying to find...
I just feel like there were so many factors, like I said, the Charlie Rumble factor, and then my dad, and then, like I said, you do, and then it changes as you get older because you turn into, like, a bit of a... is it an alter ego or whatever it is, you know? It's like you're Zeki Usain, the boxer, sort of, like, and then it's sort of that sort of carries you on a little bit, like, you sort of find a personality amongst it. And,
yeah. So you carry on training. Do you end up in, like, because you said you were doing the England stuff? How did it carry on? Did you?
I had my first one. I won that. Then I think I lost one. And then I had a bit of a run. I think I didn't lose for the rest of the season, but I got put into the schools. But I think I'd had like four and one, lost one and won four, and I got put into the schoolboys. I come up in the schools against Levi Heggie, which is another local lad, at the opposing gym to us, which was Golden Gloves, and there was a massive rivalry there. And that was, I think, the first time I'd really had any sort of pressure on me, like, going into the ring, because it was like, you can't lose this, like, we're fighting, you know, and there was a bit of a hype around him because he was so strong and, you know, and, yeah, I went in and I ended up winning that fight, and I went on to win the schoolboys that year. And it just, it just sort of took off a little bit from there. I went on a bit of a roll. Like I said, I didn't lose again for a while. I was so tiny as a kid. Like, I mean, I was even tiny as I'm not a big adult, but I think it was like 38 kilos or something.
Oh, bloody hell. I think my left leg's 38 kilos.
I was like 14 years old at 38 kilos. I was tiny.
Bloody hell. So you win the schoolboys.
Yeah.
Do you then go on to the ABAs or?
No. Then the next year I end up boxing in the schoolboys again because obviously you got, I think it's 3 years in the schoolboys. And I lose in the first round to another Golden Gloves boy called Bomber. I can't actually remember his name. I lose to Bomber in the first round and like a child where I'd lost for the first time in the season, I think I'd had like 12, 13 bouts at this point, 14 bouts, and I'd won them all. I just rebelled and I just decided I was had enough of boxing.
But just stopped?
Yeah, just stopped.
So this was would have been 14, so you just 15. Stopped?
15.
But yeah, because so at that you'd have had 4 or 5 years of training.
Yeah.
Well, no, it'd have been 6, 7 actually. Yeah. Yeah, and then that because people that don't box don't understand the work that you have to put in, and it's you're on your own as well. Yeah. So you stop, like because it's just because of the loss or just
yeah, I think it was just I think the years of training and. I look back on it now and consistency was always my biggest downfall. Even at this point now, I don't feel like I was necessarily had my head in it. You know, you get into that sort of age where you're at secondary school, all your mates are starting, you're 15, 16 years old, all your mates are starting to sort of go out and, you know, under 18s, Excaliburs or whatever it is. Yeah,
Excaliburs, bloody hell.
Yeah, no, sorry, I really have shown the age.
Not that much younger than you. Right. Fuck, man.
Yeah, I think there was just a lot of distractions. So, yeah, for whatever reason, I come out of the gym and stopped boxing. But I think I went back and had another spell. In fact, I did. I think I was out of the gym for about 6, 7 months and then I decided to go back. And I ended up boxing the person that won the schoolboys the year before at the weight above me. We ended up having that on the gym, on the home show. So I think I must have had another 3 or 4 fights, I think, that season. Because I actually stopped when I was 16. And they give me the win in the ring. His name was Daryl Hunter. He was out of Eltham. Good boy for our age. Like I said, he won the schoolboys, I think, 2 years running. But they give me the decision in the ring. And about 2 hours after, they've come to the changing room and said there's been a mistake. For whatever reason, and come and made me get back in the ring. And imagine being this young, right, and having to go through this. Yeah, going in the ring and had to give my trophy back and stuff. And I think that was it. That was just like my moment where I just went, I've had enough of this. I remember there were lots of arguments about a lot of different things being said.
A lot of politics involved.
Yeah.
The would you have said at the time that break, that 6 month break helped though, or? Or do you think it hindered you? Did you think, once you jump back in, you sort of get back to swing things, but
I was only just looking for another excuse to stop again anyway. And the next loss just sort of, that was it for me. It was like
a win slash loss.
Yeah, win slash loss. It was a really weird, I mean, I've still got the DVD indoors and on the DVD, it shows me winning. But obviously I didn't actually win, but. Yeah,
that's a especially as a imagine like 15-year-old, you're like to get in, you're still young, ain't you? You're sort of hitting that and then just getting absolutely fucked over by the sounds of it.
Well, that's how I felt, but
so you stop at 16,
totally walk away, do not do anything with boxing, do the typical stuff that you do as a youngster, getting into trouble, you know, just roaming the streets of Gillingham as a little reprobate that I was. And then, I have a few years out. I end up getting with my kid's mum. She falls pregnant. I think I was 18, 19. And it's really weird because I was just sitting in the hospital waiting, like in the waiting room. I think she'd gone for a checkup or something. And Charlie Rumble walks in. And I'm just like, you're right, Charlie. You know, it's a big embrace. Yeah. You know, he's been a massive factor in my life. And we embrace and we just get talking. And I'm like, I wish I'd never turned my back on boxing. Naively, I felt that I was too old, like, because...
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm too old. And he was like, no, you're not too old. What are you going on about? Like, you know, you don't think that... You feel that you are, because, you know, at that age, you feel like a big adult, didn't you? You know, 19 years old. Yeah, and he just said to me, I've moved from St Mary's, I've moved to Sittingbourne, I'm boxing, I'm currently coaching out of a little club, out of a little hall in Kelmsley, in Sittingbourne. He said, why don't you pop over? And it was just the perfect excuse I needed, you know. I'd settle back down again, like I said, I was having a kid. And
that bloody sobers you up very quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't think whatever age you are when you're like 18 or even older, like when you have your firstborn, you're like, oh shit, I've got to be a fucking adult here, do you know what I mean? So good.
Which was, a bit of a change for me because at that time I was very much far from an adult until I'd had a daughter. But yeah, I ended up grabbing the opportunity with both hands, which was good for me because I really did, at that point in my life, I feel like the boxing coming back in and me having a kid was exactly what I needed because, like I said, I really was going down the wrong path, sort of landed in jail and stuff and, you know, for fighting on the streets. So I was really, I wouldn't say I was out of control, but I was out of control.
Getting
so,
there,
yeah. Yeah, it just come at the right time. It was like all the stars have aligned and, yeah, well, I just grabbed it both hands, ended up going straight back down there. And I think within a couple of months, I was back, you know, back medicaled and boxing again. Like that
back on as an amateur again?
Yeah, as an amateur, as a senior. I think I had another 10 bouts for Charlie as a senior.
Just doing like to home, like not home shows.
Yeah, just sort of doing gym shows again, and... like because the inconsistency had been so much. So like, when you turn from a junior to a senior, there's a massive difference, you know. And I'd had, you know, another 5 years out of the ring by this point. So went back as a senior, I think under 20 bout, but you don't necessarily have to declare your junior. Like history, right, okay. As such, because it'd been like such a layoff, and but yeah, I went in under 20s spaces, under 20 novice. So yeah, I think like my first or second fight back was straight back into the championships, which was the under 20 novices. Again, I think I'd
is that ABAs now, or is yeah, that there?
Yeah, I got through a few rounds and ended up losing. I should have won them.
Right.
I should have won them, but I think I'd stopped a few people on the way. I'd won a box cup as well, one gold in a box cup, knocked the geezer out in the final. Me and Dan Woodgate, give Dan Woodgate a little shout out now. We always talk about why he reckons he's one of the best knockouts he's ever seen. I think his knockout, you know, one of his knockouts is, but yeah.
We've spoke about his knockout, I've
yeah,
seen that.
His
yeah.
knockout was tremendous, but yeah, I always like laugh because you can pause my video at one point and the geezer's like mid-air, like laid completely flat. Like
you'd have to send it over. I'd yeah, have to put it out on the socials.
So I knocked the geezer out and I think I just sort of took my foot off the gas a little bit because I punched hard for my weight. And
what weight are you at this point?
I was 60 kilo at this right, point, okay. Which is still like really light. And I think it's 9'9" or something, I think.
Yeah, I believe it is, yeah.
So I think I just took my foot off the gas a little bit. And I just thought I was going to breeze to the under-20s. And I ended up getting beat by quite a strong lad. But, yeah. And that was, again, the end of that for a while.
Right, okay. So once you've done that, then you've lost. Do you think that you feel like it was a setback? Or
I think I was really disappointed in myself because I always say, like, you know, I'm a coach now at St Mary's and I've done a little bit of coaching over the years. And there's nothing worse than losing to someone because you're not fit. If you lose to someone because they're better than you, like that's fine, you know, there's no shame in that. But I feel like that loss out of all of them was like, I just took my eye off the ball. And it should have been the one out of all of them where I'd really worked hard because it was the championships. But like I said, I'd gone on a bit of a roll again. And I think my mindset is always been my biggest downfall. So I don't think I was training as hard as I should have done. By this point, I think I was working and stuff, and it's always comes a little
it's
bit
hard
difficult.
When we speak to like Martin Hillman, Louis Green, like yeah. all of these lads that are still full-time out there, work, still yeah. full time working, like and it's unbelievable dedication. Getting up in like yeah. 5 a.m, going for the run, every working morning, yeah. in the gym after, and was that what you were doing as well?
Yeah, I mean, my usual, especially when I turn pro. So like my normal day would be like up at 4 o'clock in the morning and you're like going running and do a 5 mile run, then you straight, you know, straight in the shower, straight to work. Then you're coming home, excuse me, and straight to the gym. And I remember when I was training over Sittingbourne, for example, like I'm from Gillingham, or when I was training over Sheerness, you know, you get driving 30 minutes just to get to the gym. Mm. Then you train, you don't finish training till 8:30, 9 o'clock. Then you're driving back, you're not getting home till 9:30, 10 o'clock. By the time you've had a bit to eat and another shower, you know, you're talking, it's like 10, 11 o'clock yeah, at night.
Trying to diffuse and then you're back up at 4 a.m. So you stop at this point. When yeah. do you restart? So what are you, 19, 20 now?
I think, yes, I'm about 20, 21, I think, actually, because, yeah, trying to put a timeline on it. Yeah, and I come away from it for 4 years again. So again, inconsistency.
Do you think you're just trying to work? Maybe you've burnt out because of the 4 o'clock in.
I just think, yeah, like it's just, I've got kids now, and I think my just like I was looking in a different direction. But then just like bug, I can't get away from it. So you go a little while, and then I don't think that time I actually planned to walk away though. It was more just like
you just fell out of it.
Yeah, just fell out of it, and then yeah, I just stopped again, and then Charlie ended up moving and opening his own gym in Sittingbourne in the Eurolink Industrial Estate. And I think I just went over to see him and I just, again, fell in love with it. But this time I was like, I want to turn pro. And it was a bit like, are you sure? Like, you're mad. Like, you've had 4 years out. And I was like, no, I want to turn pro. I want to turn pro. So Charlie was like, yeah, no problem. I think he wanted me to have a couple of amateur fights. Like, again, just get back in the swing of things. And I think he was looking at a few people. And for whatever reason, it didn't happen. So, yeah, I ended up just jumping straight into the pro game.
How did you start the pro game? Who did you start the pro game with then? Charlie or?
Yeah, I was being trained by, I was actually getting trained by Charlie Rumble Jr. by this point. He'd sort of took over that role. Charlie Sr., you know, he was all about the kids. You know, he loves bringing the kids through, and he's got such an addictive personality. I think that is where his skill set is as well. So yeah, Charlie Rumble Jr. started training me, and I'd signed with a woman called Miranda Carter. I think she had a promotion called Left Jab Promotions. She used to do a boxing show on a Sunday afternoon, which was exactly the reason why I'd turned over with her, because my dad, he was always a market trader, and Saturdays were a no-go for him. You know, he's up 2 a.m. and didn't get home till like 8-9 o'clock at night, so I just didn't want to box on a Friday or Saturday because my old man wouldn't have been able to be there.
Yeah.
So she always done a Sunday show.
She's still about or?
I don't think she is, no. I don't think she is. I think she stepped away from it.
COVID probably. I'm not sure. A lot of COVID. Oh, okay.
But she had quite, I look at quite a lot of the people that were boxing on them shows. I think like Lorraine Richards, I think he boxed on the same show as my pro debut. Danny Cassius Connor. I think he was another one like them sort of boxers. Yeah, so they weren't bad shows for for the standard that we were boxing at.
So who was your first fight against?
Gibbons I boxed for. Boxed against, and I lost that. I lost that pro fight.
Ticket seller or?
No, he wasn't. But
was you? That's...
Yeah, I was, yeah. Yeah, and to be, I did all right on tickets, so I... Quite,
not hard. Was it hard? Because we always.
It's always hard.
Yeah,
it's always hard. You're almost putting a ball and chain around someone's ankle. As soon as they say they're buying the ticket, it's like you're pulling a contract out. But when you pay me, you know, pushing the ticket, take the ticket, like pay me. As soon as the tickets are out.
Because people don't. Oh well, I think we've hammered the you have to pay for the house, you have to pay for the opponent, and you then before you even start getting paid.
Yeah, and I mean, when you say getting paid, you don't really get paid.
Yeah, anymore. Exactly. Yeah,
by the time you sort of put your nutritional costs in, by the time you work out how much you've spent getting to training,
management costs.
Yeah. You know, even your fight wear, your training stuff, like you'll be very lucky to break even.
Yeah, I can. So you, where was that first fight?
York Hall.
York Hall. Okay, so you're not up at the mecca of boxing. How did you find York Hall? What have you?
I always remember that moment. I was talking to Big Tom Dallas about it, actually. After I lost that fight, I remember I see him somewhere randomly, and he was like, "Zeg, what happened? And I was like, "Tom." I was like, it's like the weirdest thing. It was like I went out there. I was like, felt amazing. You know, felt amazing. Campered. You know, gone brilliantly. I felt as fit as ever. I was doing good long rounds with good boxers, and sparring was perfect. And I just went out, and it was just like, I remember the moment they called my name. It was just like, I sort of stood back and I looked around, and I was just like, boom, my legs just turned to jelly. And it was like,
you had like the adrenaline dump.
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, you choose to be there. So it's not it's not like my arsehole fell out because I want to be there. You know, it's like, well, I think it's just not the occasion. Like I've said this before a few times as well. As an amateur, you turn up in the gym Monday and your coach is like, well, you're boxing Friday. There's none of this like, oh, who or when or why or have you got a video of him? It's just like you turn up and it's fine. I'm boxing Friday. You just turn up. There's no game plan. You just, you're, you got your skill set. That's what your skill set is. You turn up, you box to the best of your abilities, and if you win, you win. You know, I was lucky. I only lost 4 amateur fights. 27, lost 4. Wasn't bad, you know. But when I just turned up, and it was just such a different environment, like selling all these tickets, there was a lot more different pressure.
It's also people above you, and they're on top of you. I wouldn't even say about your arsehole falling out. I wouldn't even say that, because you're stepping in the ring anyway. When you go there, like, if you haven't made that walk, I don't think you understand when everyone's there and you're just screaming at you.
We had a couple of other local lads boxing on the show as well that we actually trained with, like Ricky Leach at the time. Yeah. He wasn't a journeyman per se at that point. Mm. He'd actually gone into to be a boxer, and Jake Spring,
yes,
as well. He boxed, and obviously we was all sort of knocking around the same sort of gyms at the time. Mm. So it was more like, although I had 100 fans, it was like I also had his 100 fans, yeah, and his 100 fans. Yeah. So it really was, honestly, like, on the commentary, they say Zek sold a lot of tickets here, and it was just like the noise was unbelievable. And like I said, I just remember looking around and just thinking, wow, like, what is it? What's happened, you know? Mm. And I look across the ring, and the geezer were still across the ring from me. For whatever reason, I think I come in at super featherweight, because I'd missed weight. I'd actually come in underweight, and he'd come in like the top end of the next weight, because he actually boxed at the weight above. So there was like almost 2 weights between us. Fucking and it's like, when you watch it, it's like, you can see even through YouTube, like, this geezer's like, you know, he's a big fella compared to me. And he let's say he wasn't messing around. He definitely didn't come.
Was he a journeyman though, or?
Not in a typical sense.
No.
Your first fight. I always remember Joe LD ringing me the day before going, Zek, like, why on earth? I was going to try and do the Grant Dennis. I was going to try and do the Grant Dennis impression, but I can't do it. Just end up sounding Indian or saying, yeah, he rung me up the day before, and he went, Zek, what are you doing? He went, you shouldn't be boxing this kid. Like, so I think they're from the same sort of area.
Yeah.
And he's like, this kid's a good kid, you know, Zek. He's like, for your first pro fight, you've had 4 years out, you shouldn't be boxing this kid. And I'm like, as much as you helped me, it was almost like, cheers, Joe.
Cheers,
like,
mate.
Really needed this. Like,
I could imagine the phone call as well. Yeah.
What are you doing, Zek?
Yeah. With that dunny accent.
Yeah, so, no, but he really come, and he weren't coming to like to roll. I think it tells you the state of boxing. I think my opponent had 5-1-3 and lost 2, I believe, at the time. So he had a winning record. But he had more wins than every other like fighter put together on that show. So all the other away fighters, you put them all together, and he had more wins, and that tells you the state of boxing.
Yeah, yeah. Do you not say anything to the promoter or anything? Because you've got to build a career. Like, the journeyman side of it is to build your career as a pro.
I've always been a little bit arrogant.
Oh, fair enough.
I really did. Like, and again, this is an arrogant thing. Like, I'm massively underachieved in boxing. Oh. Like, massively. Like, through my inconsistencies, I'm massively... And I lost, and there's no excuse for that. But... he shouldn't have beat me.
Yeah, fair enough.
No, I'm levels above him. He was a good fighter, but I was a much better boxer than him. I actually think I was a little bit hard done by. I think that I deserved at least a draw, if not a win. Like I said, I'll come back to the corner after the third, and Bill Rumble, who by this point took over coaching me, he was saying to me, Zek, like, you're winning this fight. Just, you know, don't go out, don't do anything stupid. Stay on your feet. You've won this fight. That's how I felt. I felt that I'd won the fight. Thought I'd pick the cleaner punches, and you know, he always laughs, the fella, saying I've put about 3 inches on his neck because some of the uppercuts I hit him with, like, in the amateur game, he'd definitely been a few standing counts. He come and he put it all on the line on an away show, and he won. So
I say, you say about like being arrogant, I think you have to, especially in boxing, I think you have to have it, because if you don't, you've got to believe in your own ability, because other people try and put it like,
yeah.
You see it, like, I know Twitter's like the cesspool of fucking just shit, but anyone that boxes and you just see the polarising opinions of like everything.
It's like arseholes, everyone's got one.
Yeah, true, yeah. So you then went to your second fight?
No, then I have another 4 years.
Oh, right, okay.
I know, yeah. So I'm in a car accident. And I break my collarbone. So I have like, I think about 18 months out.
So the car action's got, so the boxing's got nothing to do with you dropping out?
No. I was still, you know, fully on board. But at this point it was like, now it's like, I've got something to prove.
Mm-hmm.
I've had one pro fight and I've lost it. And like I said, I'm still arrogant enough and, you know, I've done a lot in boxing. I said one box cups and I boxed some good kids over the years. And I can't have one pro fight and lose one pro fight and walk away. Like, you know, it can't happen. But yeah, I ended up having a car accident, breaking my collarbone. And I decided that I was going to start playing football, which I'd never done before. And just as I'd like, sort of recovered and started thinking about getting punching again, I got tackled and I fall and break my other collarbone.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Again, another interview I'd done with Dan Woodgate, he says to me, maybe I should have changed my name to Lucky, because by this point, this is exactly how it felt. It was like everything was going against me. So then I have another 18 months out because, you know, a collarbone's a really sort of hard one when it comes to boxing. Okay, the break might only take, I don't know, 12 weeks to heal.
But all the muscle.
And by that, I think I'd done my rotator cuffs because I was getting all sorts of clicking noises and all sorts. So, yeah, it takes me another 4 years before I end up getting back in the ring again.
Yeah, slightly different though. So about inconsistencies. Obviously, you justify you dropping out. But this one, I think, potentially is not your fault.
Yeah, yeah. But again, by the time I broke my collarbone the second time, I was ready to, that was it. Like, you know, at the end of the day, I've lost a pro fight. I was happy because I've always been happy. Like, at the end of the day, I turned pro.
Mm.
If I'd have walked away with one loss at the end of the day, like, still a great achievement for me. Like, my dream was to be a professional boxer and box at York Hall. Whether I win or whether I lose, but at this point, it doesn't really matter. Like, I've got my kids, I've got my family, like, I've got my working life. The arrogance is washing away a little bit. Like, from, I think it comes with maturity and age. Like, yeah, the arrogance was sort of washing away a little bit. And I just thought, if I don't box again, I don't box again.
So how did this second fight come about? Because I imagine now you're not with...
No. I've moved away from the Rumbles again.
Right.
For whatever reason.
And the promoter as well.
And the promoter, yeah. I was, free agent or whatever, so to speak. And, I went through a little bit of a bad patch. I got alopecia. I'd lost all my hair. I was like going through a bit of a, I call it an episode in my life. I was, you know, and I think I got talking to Joe again, and Joe was like, you know, why don't you come back to the gym? And I'm saying, right, I need a fresh start. And
whilst he's bringing the Kent scene for them few years.
I have to say, like, mine and Joe's conversation, I don't actually think it was about, because he's a promoter.
Yeah.
He knows I sell tickets and he probably knows that I sell, you know, a lot of tickets. So, but the conversation we had was, I don't feel that it was business. Like, I was, like I said, I was going for a bit of a bad patch. And he just said to me, look, like, why don't you go down and trade with Ray? He's like,
Mick Mills option down in the basement.
Yeah, down in the basement. Yeah. no, actually, at the time he was still over at Sheerness.
Oh, was he? Oh.
Why don't you go over there and train with Ray? I think you'll really get on with him. And, you know, I'd sort of seen Ray on the scene. I remember being over Rumbles when he used to train Gavin Tate.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And he used to come over and Scotty Wolford. You know, I was a massive fan of Scotty and Vinnie Wolford. And I used to follow him everywhere when they were signed by Maloney. I really had a boxing bug and I used to follow him all up and down the country. And I used to see Ray come into the gym with Gavin and you know, be his coach sparring and stuff. And then, like I said, when I used to go out to shows, I used to see Ray, you know, on the circuit. So I sort of always knew who he was, but I never really had a chance to actually get chatting to him. And yeah, so I ended up going over and training with Ray.
With Ray, how did you find it? Click instantly?
Yeah, I think with Ray, you've only got to be in his presence for about a minute before you realise the absolute heart. And he's the nicest man I think you'll ever meet, especially in boxing. And his passion for the game. And this, like, an innocence behind it. Like, he wants nothing but the absolute best. If he decides he's training you, or if there's anything he can do to help you in any way, yeah, you're getting 100% of his time and his energy. So, yeah, instantly, I think we hit it off. And I think he could also see that, you know, I had hardly any air in my head. And I think he could see how much of a rough time I was going through as well. I think that sort of helped. The little time I was with Ray, he really become quite a massive influence in, you know, not only my boxing, but like my personal life as well. Mm. You know, the sort of person you could ring up and just have a chat with about anything. And said he'd give you his time.
We had him on. He speaks so well as well. So I'll give a little shout out to Ray. We had him on, and he, the way he describes it is if he has that feeling with someone that he trains, then it just becomes so easy. And so he goes, sometimes it doesn't work. It's like you have that. And I don't actually hear, every time I think Ray gets brought up, especially with us, like we're quite a closed circuit, never hearing anything negative. It's always positive. Even for helping us, the podcast, he's been absolutely fantastic.
I can't imagine that anyone could have anything bad to say
true,
about him.
Yeah, true,
you know, he's that much of a genuine person. Mm. Right? And I think even in life, it's rare enough, but I think we all know what the boxing scene's like. In boxing, it's lonely, you know, if you're with them, you're with them. And then if you're not, your arseholes fell out and, you know, you're no good and you've gone downhill, you've gone backwards and like all this sort of stuff. And Ray's just not that, you know, even if you're not with him, he's still got nothing bad to say.
Yeah, that's true. And I won't name names. There are definitely people out there that you can sit back, and if he wanted the opportunity, he could, but he doesn't. I respect that. I respect that, because there's not many people out there that are like that as well.
No, that's right.
So you sign with Joe.
Yep.
You're working with Ray.
Yep.
And then you come to your second pro fight.
Yep. I think we were supposed to box and something happened before, so I'd had quite a bit of time with Ray. And I think he knew it was a bit of psyche, like, with me. So he was, like, constantly in my head. Like, not only was he training me mentally, he was also training me mentally, you know, like, and we had lots of conversations about taking in the moment, you know, and just enjoying it. And even if you can stop your opponent, like, it's not like match fixing, but he's like, look, I want you to go and enjoy every round of this fight. It's like every minute of every round, I want you to really soak in, enjoy it, like, rather than, you know, that moment I had in your call where I looked around and was like, whoa, like, it was, enjoy it, you know.
But that's the point of the journeyman, to be like, you say that people have like 40 losses, but you're like, well, you're trying to build a pro to become. And if you look at all the pros, apart from if you're Olympians, if you're an Olympian, maybe, because then you sign with your matrons, but it's your small haul, you need that, you just...
I think my whole mindset had started really changing by this point as well, because I've said it quite a lot, like, and I believe this in my heart. I boxed, but I was never a boxer by this point. And I mean, you've only got to look at Louis Green. I'll give Louis Green a shout out for, you know, his performance last week. That there's a fighting man. And I wouldn't want to insult people like him and put myself in the same bracket. I'm on about by this point in my boxing. I knew that I was never going to be, you know, world champion, or, you know, like, I knew my limits and, you know, my age and stuff. I think mine was just about getting back in there and
enjoying it
rather than actually, you know, do I think at this point I could have gone in and put a performance in like that? Do I think that I had the grit and determination? I don't think I did, you know. And that's testament to people like Louis and Adam Dingsdale and people like that.
That's good. Self-reflecting as well. Like, you have to give testament to self-reflecting. Not many people will have that self-reflection and go, okay, this is where I stand.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, at a point in my boxing life, I feel like I put myself amongst, you know, and I do believe, like I said before, and you know, since we've been talking, I'm massively underachieved through no fault but my own. But I just wanted to go in there, and I've got my kids, and I wanted them to see me win. They've watched me my first pro fight lose, and you know, and I just really wanted to go out there and get a win. So
where was it? Maidstone or
Moat Park,
Moat Park, yeah.
And I was actually boxing Ricky Leach, who I've known for years. But you know, it's boxing. You know, he's a journeyman by this point. He needs paying. I need an opponent. It wasn't supposed to be that way. I think Joe had tried finding me some suitable opponents, and like we've spoke about now, it's like Joe didn't want to throw me under the bus this time, because I was actually really looking to kick on, you know, and really, you know, push on. It was sort of my last chance. And there'd been, without naming any names at this point, there'd been some people that had just been put forward to box for the Southern Area title at the same weight as I was boxing at. And it was like, I'm looking at these fighters thinking to myself, right, well, I spar these guys. And I know.
What weight are you?
I'm super featherweight by this point.
Okay, I know. All right.
Yeah, like, yeah, because I don't want to sound disrespectful in any sort of way.
It's under, but it's one of them ones, though, isn't it?
But
it's
I'm looking and thinking,
that's fine. I just wanted to know where he was at. I know who it is.
I can win this fight. Like, I know what happens, like, sort of in these spars and stuff. And, you know, this person's actually a good friend of mine. And, you know, like, but I'm looking, and I think more, not necessarily looking at him and judging our spars, I think it was more just like a level of capabilities of myself rather than him.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, my style against a lot of these other people, and, you know, I feel like at this point, that division at domestic level was wide open. There wasn't
no real...
It still
is now.
Yeah.
It still is now. They say you've got a good opportunities if you're at that weight to, like, kick on and do well as well.
Yeah, which, to be honest, which is why I targeted that weight when I come back. I didn't want to do lightweight. I thought to me, I looked at that weight and I thought, if I can get myself down to 9'2" or whatever it was at the time, I mean, I was foolish enough to make championship weight to prove to myself I could.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to come in at 9'2". I think I was coming at 9'4". But I come in at 9'2". And I targeted that weight and I wanted to make championship weight just to make sure that I could do it. And it was going to be comfortable for me. But yeah, so I boxed super feather.
So how comes it didn't kick on? COVID or COVID hit?
So I boxed Ricky Leach and he made me work for it. But we all know what it is. Ricky Leach is a lot better than his record suggests.
And
if he wants to come and give you, you know, he will, you know, he really is a lot better than, and he can take a punch, he can give a punch. I worked for that win. I really enjoyed it. I boxed really well. And then I come out and Joe was saying to me that the, was it the Boxer Series or something?
First one was a lot of weight, wasn't it?
Yeah. And he was really good, Joe, at getting his boxing opportunities, and he still is, you know.
Yeah.
You know, look at the people like Grant Dennis got to the final.
Lenny got to the final. Yeah.
So it was like, they look at your ticket sales, don't they? And, you know, as long as you can sort of sell some tickets and, you know. So Joe basically said to me, Zek, like, I think we've got a good chance here of getting you into this. And I was like, right, this is it. I'm going to push on here. And yeah, within like a month, COVID had hit.
Right.
So, and you know, this time I'm 35. Like, time's running out for me. I'm not Benjamin Button. Grant Dennis. I don't know how he manages to do what he does at his age.
Yeah.
And also, by this point, I'm sparring people, like, and I'm starting to struggle a little bit. Like,
and you're probably seeing the new generation.
Well, I am, And again, without sounding big-headed, like a lot of the new people coming through go back 5 or 6 years. Like, there's, you know, I'd like to think there was no sort of like they wouldn't have been good enough to sort of spar.
Yeah, yeah.
By this point, I'm seeing punches because I've always been quite an aggressive counter puncher. I'm seeing punches and I'm moving out of the way of them, but I can't land my own shots by this point, and I really feel like I can feel it in myself that I'm slowing down. So
you decide to become a coach then?
Yeah. Well, through COVID, I went from 9'2", I went all the way up to 13 stone, just from eating junk and not training and
bulking.
Yeah,
bulking. I'm 13 stone now.
Yeah,
I'm 16.
Yeah.
I feel it.
There's no way I could have got back down to 9 stone. And I've sparred the likes of, you know, Charlie Shane, and there's no way I want to be getting punched in the head by, you know, the likes of Danny Shannon and Charlie Shane.
Yeah.
Like, just not a bit of me. You know, like, there's a massive difference. I punch hard for my weight. I don't punch hard for their weight.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm not a natural, you know, I'm not naturally, it's like a middleweight. So, yeah, I decided to walk away. Then, again, I started getting itchy knuckles. I start thinking, now I'm 1-1 as a pro. I don't want to be 1-1. I want to leave with a winning record. So I start thinking about boxing again. And this was only the turn of this year.
Really?
Yeah, I start thinking.
So we're in October now.
Yeah, it was the beginning of this year. I started getting itchy knuckles. And I started thinking, you know, by this point, I've slimmed down a little bit. I'm now like 12 stone.
What did you get? Well, I think it'd be a while. Well,
yeah.
10.
Yeah.
10. Yeah.
And I'm starting looking, you know, like people like Grant, they are a massive inspiration to you, aren't they? Like you're watching them on telly, and I do. I'm a massive boxing fan, but you're like watching them, and then you're watching them, and you're thinking, why can't I do it? He's 40, like, why can't I do it? I'm, you know, he's, surely if he can do it, I can do it. So that was my mindset at this point. I was like, right, I'm going to get back into it. But I thought to myself, no, why don't I try and do a bit of coaching? Like, so I used to, a few years ago, I used to do a bit of coaching for the the sort of unlicensed scene. And I thought, you know, why don't I just go back in that sort of capacity? So I think I approached a few gyms. I might have put something out on Facebook and was like, has anyone got any gym space? Anyone want to do something? And I've known Jerome for years, you know, the coach down at St Mary's. We had our first amateur fights on the same show, boxed together for years. So I ended up having a conversation with Jerome. And at this point, I think there's sort of the space at St Mary's for coaches. So Jerome said to me, you know, why don't I not do the unlicensed stuff? Why don't I come back down and do a bit, you know, with like the boys at St Mary's?
Yeah.
So he offered me, you know, a role down at St Mary's, and he left it completely up to me if I wanted to do seniors or juniors. A good friend of mine, Aaron Deville, who I have to also give him a shout out.
Yeah,
the work that boy does in behind the scenes for St Mary's is absolutely amazing. You know, matchmaking, running around. I was out with him this week. We went all the way to Camberley midweek and didn't get home until 11 o'clock at night, taking boys sparring. You know,
I remember sparring Aaron, he fucking it's hard. It's hard.
Me and Aaron have had a few moves around. Yeah, he's a big boy, Aaron.
Yeah, he's a good lad as well. Really good lad.
His passion for the amateur game is, you know, can't be matched, I don't think. He really is. So, yeah, that was a massive factor. So I wanted to go down and help Aaron and you know, work with the amateurs. So I went down and just hit the ground running down there. Obviously, I've got a massive history with the club. There's still pictures of me on the wall from when, you know, I was, you know.
I bet that feels nice walking in.
Yeah, it does, yeah. And get a bit of time to reflect, look around and look, read the, you know, the newspaper clips and the wall and stuff about you. And picture of me and Lloyd Hannigan on the wall when I won Boxer of the Day at Lord Mayor's show in London, you know, at 14, 15. Massive history there. Massive history. And I think that's a big factor for me. Going back and giving to a club that give me so much. And the club's on the up massively. It really is on
again,
the up now.
Again, the clubs have always been like, I know, I remember growing up, Golden Gloves, St Mary's was always the two that got spoke about. Yeah. St Mary's seemed to, I think, because Johnny Armour come out of St Mary's, it's always had that reputation. Yeah. And I think that was where it was able to attract more and more. And then you hear more and more good lads come out of St Mary's and you're like, holy shit, you are churning some
fucking... Yeah. And I think it's done a bit of a cycle. I'm not saying it ever really fell off as such.
No.
But like now, you know, in the last year...
We got the Atoma brothers, didn't you?
Yeah, well, they've come out of there. Look what they've done. Yeah, massively. Exactly.
You're the Paul Coyle.
Yeah, Paul Coyle. That's who I was about to give a shout out to. Yeah. And honestly...
We're trying to get Johnny on. I need a message.
Yeah. Well, I might be able to help you out there when he's...
I've got his blowing.
Paul Coyle, I mean, absolute talent. Like, when I'm talking about talent, it's so natural. And, you know, they're from a fighting family.
Yeah. Which,
you know, and there's a few kids down there I'm looking at now going, like, these kids could be superstars. Like, I honestly think if Paul Coyle keeps his head down and... he's such a down-to-earth kid anyway, but if he can manage to keep his feet grounded, I think he can go all the way. What he done last season was unexpected. You know, I can't remember his actual record, but he'd had under 10 bouts and he didn't win the developments. And when he went into, you know, into the next set of championships, I don't think he was expected to win them. And last year he won the national championships. Then he went on to win the Three Nations and then he went to the Europeans. And, you know, you look at his performances throughout all these competitions, I don't think anyone really took
him. He looks like he hits hard as well.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Someone he saw.
We also had Jalen Howe last year win a championship.
I was going to say,
again, I've only been down there 10 months, and just looking at some of these kids, you can really see, you know, they're going places.
So I think we've probably answered the question. What is next for you? Is it just the coaching, or?
Yeah, yeah.
Or are you getting them itchy knuckles?
I am, but honestly, I can put my hand on my heart and say the buzz I get from training these amateurs is far greater than any buzz I ever felt as a boxer myself. You know, it really is addictive, and, you know, it's such a family vibe down there. I definitely will never box again. I've lost that. It was a massive transition for me, like I said, being Zeki the boxer.
Yeah.
To being, I remember the first time I said to someone, no, I don't box anymore. It was like a weight had been lifting off my shoulders. It was like I'd finally managed to shake off that, because it is a bravado, and it is a... I look back now and I'm like, why was I so keen to keep the tag? Like, even if I, like, say for example, if I wasn't training, yeah, and someone come up to you, like, you'd be out and they'd be like, you all right, are you boxing? And you'd just almost lie and be like, yeah, well, I'm just in the gym ticking over. And I look back and I'm like, why did I feel the need to be Zeki the boxer? Like, it was like, I think it'd been the only real thing I'd accomplished. So it was like, you know, you see a lot of it, don't you? I mean, it's a bit of a tricky thing to touch on, but, you know, you look at the likes of Gary Speed, it's like when he, I'm not saying that's what happened to him, but no, it's like, I feel like you're this footballer for all these years, and then when you walk away from that, it's like you find it hard to adjust in the normal world. It's like, what are you now? Or like, I've got mates that have been in the army.
Ricky Atten, the military side.
When they come out of the military,
it's like horrible.
Yeah, you're now just a civilian as such. Like, I think you really struggle to find your feet, and I think this is like quite a lot of it in sports. It's like when you walk away from being Zeki the boxer, it's now, what am I like? Zeki the block paver, or, you know, what?
Zeki the coach.
Yeah, that's it now, yeah. But
now trying to get the next set of champions. Yeah,
and I feel like through the trainers I've had over the years, like Charlie Rumble, when I take what I said about earlier about how he gets in your brain, the mindset he gives you, and then working with like the likes of Ray Askew, like where he's really down to the finer details and foot movement, and, you know, he can teach a southpaw to be a southpaw, and he can look at you and your style and go, right, this is how I want you to box. Like, you're a body puncher, so I want you to punch to the body. I feel like I've gained a wealth of experience over the years, and I really do feel like I've got a lot to give to the new crop coming through.
So what we like to do with everyone, you might actually look quite like this because you're saying about your boxing passion stuff. Yeah. We like to ask everyone their perfect boxer via different attributes. People right get put on the spot with this, I've noticed. So
I should have seen this coming, Sid. I listened to you. Should I? I haven't actually thought about it.
So if I was to say who's got the best footwork, it can be past, present, doesn't matter. Who's got the best footwork?
I feel like I like to be a little bit different.
That's fine.
I feel like Mike Tyson doesn't get enough credit for the footwork and the positioning he managed to get into, the positions he managed to get into to get these shots off. People look at his power a lot more than foot placement.
That kind of punch power? Who?
Gerald McLennan.
Chin?
Chin's a hard one. Chris Eubank Sr.
Boxing IQ?
Muhammad Ali.
Defensive work?
Oh, I think you've got to go with the main man, haven't you, Floyd?
And attacking prowess?
My man, Nigel Benn.
Anything else on that?
No, just thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And I'd like to also, again, plug St Mary's Boxing Club, if anyone needs any details.
I was thinking about that,
Have a chat with everyone down
there. Yeah, doing a show down there.
It would be nice to get a few of these amateurs on, and you know, I'm sure some of them have got a lot of stories to tell.
Yeah, no, I'll be
over. They don't get enough exposure, I don't think.
I think it'd be good to give, like, we want to give people as much exposure much, like, obviously it helps them, it helps us.
Yeah.
Everything like that. Again, if you like the episode, the JMS Boxing Podcast, on the socials, and £3 a month on Patreon. Cheers. Sports Social Podcast Network.